I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. 45 states, including Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware, and the District of Columbia, have adopted the Common Core standards for K-12 education. Supporters say the standards will make American students better prepared for college and for career. Resistance comes from those who contend the standards are flawed and others who say they represent a federal government takeover of public education. The result is an education reform movement that once had support from a diverse group of stakeholders that has now become highly politicized. We're going to take a look at the history of Common Core standards and where we are today on Radio Times. And we begin our conversation with Claudio Sanchez, and he covers education for NPR, joins us from the NPR studios. And Claudio Sanchez, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Good to be with you, Marty.
You know, Common Core has been described in so many different ways. I feel like we need to begin with a definition. How do you describe, or how would you define what Common Core is?
Well, let's go back to the premise and the reason for the push for Common Core's standards. Raising the bar for all children, regardless of where they live, then comparing their progress based on the same high standards, makes sense. That was the argument that really kicked in back in 2009 when this was introduced. And it was state school commissioners and governors who were frustrated by the meager improvement of their schools that launched the Common Core standards. So around 2009, Delaware's governor, Jack Markell, a Democrat, and then Georgia governor, Sonny Perdue, a Republican, co-chaired a committee that was set out to promote the new standards and convince other governors to adopt them.
And when we talk about it, these are benchmarks, right? These are sort of a basic outline about what students need to know in order to graduate from high school with a knowledge base that either leads them to a career or to college.
Right. It was to prepare them for college or the world of work. And governors only had to look at how poorly their students were doing in that respect to compare to kids in other industrialized nations. A lot of this was driven by states that were saying, look, other nations are moving really fast ahead of us, and unless we do something, unless we come together and create some consensus about what kids should know and be able to do, we're going to be really left in the dust. And remember that up until now, we've had 50 different standards for every state, and the definitions of what a child should know and be able to do proficiently or at grade level has varied almost as much. So it's been this hodgepodge of standards and tests that governors felt needed to be addressed.
And we're talking about mathematics and language arts. Those are the two major subject areas.
That's right.
Is there a curriculum that goes on with that goes along with Common Core?
Well, I think that needs to be clear. The Common Core standards are only a guide for states to follow as they write their curriculum. Still, of course, critics argue that the standards are too rigorous, too complex, and that they're driving the standards are going to dictate what is in that curriculum. But there is a bit of a myth in that, you know, the standards are the goal. How you get there is up to the local school districts, up to local educators. But that's obviously been one of the big areas of contention, because when people say, look, this is going to be the tail wagging the dog, well, that's not entirely true. Curriculum, the textbooks, the materials that a classroom teacher uses in the classroom, the reading materials, all of that will or should be decided by the local educators who know their kids best. The state simply is saying, we're going to buy into the ultimate goal, which is to make sure that these kids are reading, writing, and doing math at a proficient level, at a grade level, because many are not.
I was reading about the Gates Foundation having some kind of a partnership with Pearson, actually, to produce some K-12 courses that would be lined up with Common Core. What does that tell you? And I know that the Gates Foundation has been very much a supporter of Common Core standards.
And a supporter of NPR, for that matter. I think that, you know, the question is, who profits from all this? And clearly, test makers like Pearson, you know, big high-tech companies, Apple, Microsoft, others that have been developing educational software and services pegged to the Common Core. I mean, all those people will make money in some way or another. In fact, anybody who wants a piece of the billions of dollars that is going into the development of the Common Core and related products stands to make money. Mm. The question is, you know, are they having a disproportionate say in how these Common Core standards are going to be rolled out. And as you know, the critics have said, yes, you know, especially on the left, you know, it's all these big business is taking over schools and they're essentially in it for the money. And I guess that certainly rankles a lot of educators who feel that, you know, moneymakers have no business in this. Yes, they're providers of important materials, but boy, the profit motive should not drive the adoption of the core.
And is it the rollout or the beginning of the rollout that has created the critics for Common Core? Because it's so interesting that, you know, the majority of states adopted it, and it looked like it came out of some very good intentions and some bipartisan support for how to figure out how to make education better in this country.
Well, going back to the example of Georgia, which where Governor Sonny Perdue was one of the co-signers to this and was promoting it initially. Well, Georgia, if you fast forward, along with at least another 9 or 10 states, have essentially pushed back. I mean, there are legislators in these states that have said, wait a minute, let's stop here and reevaluate what we've done. I think the federal government's role has been one of the real big controversies for many legislators, especially among conservatives. Even though it has had no direct input, Marty, it did, however, incentivize the adoption of the Common Core by dangling federal aid, race to the top money to states that, in front of states that adopted the college and career ready standards that the administration very much supports. And that, of course, is exactly what the Common Core is all about, promoting college and career ready standards. Now, the Obama administration also provided $350 million for the development of Common Core tests designed by a testing consortium known as PARC and Smarter Balance. These two organizations have already rolled out some pilot testing. And again, conservatives have said, look, this is the federal government, certainly the Obama administration, driving this whole thing. And many view it as a takeover of local decisions of what kids learn and how teachers teach. Even though that role, the federal role, is marginal at best, but it is an important role. And so states are very wary of that.
Well, in fact, I ran across the phrase or the word Obama Core, and this is coming, I guess, right, from critics who see this as a federal government takeover and obviously playing on the Obamacare word.
You know, one of the other interesting things about all this is that the arguments for and against the new standards have had really limited impact on public opinion because, according to some recent polls, 62% of Americans have never heard of the Common Core.
Wow. Which tell, I mean, that what does that tell you?
Well, it tells us that this was certainly rushed into action and that there hasn't been enough time to debate the merits or the flaws in the Common Core. I ran into, you know, people who want to believe that this is all well-intentioned. I've spoken to many, many parents over the last few months, and one of them told me, look, she says, I can see how conservatives would say it's just another way for the government to take control of our schools. It's one more rule, one more law, and we're losing our freedoms. You know, we're losing, parents locally are losing their say in what kids and how kids are doing, how other schools are performing. But the same parent said, I don't think that that's really the goal here. I think there is a good motive behind it. So a lot of parents, even if they know more than the average parent, I think they're kind of torn. They're ambivalent about all this. And often, you know, they're hearing really some extreme arguments on both sides.
And that's Claudio Sanchez. If that voice sounds very familiar to you, he covers education for NPR. The first of three guests in this hour of Radio Times, we're taking a look at Common Core standards and the rollout, what's in it, what's not in it, and lines open at 1-888-477-9499. Claudio, would you say that the testing, if it isn't more rigorous, it's a different kind of testing, it's getting away from those bubble answers, but testing people's critical thinking skills, their problem-solving skills?
Well, the Common Core proponents have a slogan for the standards, and it's, quote, fewer, higher, deeper. What for example, when people look at have looked at the new math problems, they may very well be the same problems that kids have been, you know, in fourth, fifth, and eighth grade have been dealing with, but there is now an effort to really get kids to think deeper into how you get to the answer that you got to. The same applies to the reading materials. You know, to be able to analyze and to make arguments, it's not like answering the question, you know, what did you do for to write about what you did for the summer. It's really maybe a question about why the school day should be longer or shorter. You know, people want to know what the thought process is for these kids, how they came to the conclusions they did. And that is a bit of a shift, because too often, you know, these bubble tests, these multiple choice tests don't get at those things. Now, there is an argument to be made, and often it comes from the left, that the rigor of the new standards will widen the achievement gap and discourage struggling students. And once the failure rate of students rises, then, you know, that's going to be an enormous problem. And that's already happened. Pearson, which you mentioned earlier, the textbook publisher, you know, had some common, piloted some Common Core related tests in 2012 and 2013 in New York and Kentucky. And what those states saw was a huge drop in proficiency rates, grade level, the grade level rates that people use to measure kids' progress. And those drops were by 25 to 30%. In other words, it was a much harder test, and kids pretty much flunked many of these, some of these tests. And so people are trying to get ready for that. I mean, this is a tougher test in English and math initially, and people are going to have to brace themselves for, you know, poor performance because kids haven't been challenged before.
Well, and one of the criticisms or even pushbacks that I read from teachers, which is that, you know, our curriculum is the same, the testing is different, and there's this disconnect between what's going on in the classroom and how children are being quizzed on a particular, or in this case, in the Common Core testing.
That's been an argument, clearly, that the unions, the teachers' unions, have noted that, you know, that we are rushing ahead with these piloted tests, that we're looking at a full adoption of these standards by 2015. But there's been little or no preparation. Certainly close to 70% of teachers say they've had little or no training. Many say they weren't consulted. And so there is a problem here. There is a disconnect because people are still working off of, you know, old standards, old ways of teaching, old ways of gauging what kids are learning. And we're moving ahead with a very, very different scheme with which to do all these things. And I think it's teachers who have really begun to feel that they're certainly not prepared. And as you may know, both unions, National Education Association and American Federation of Teachers, have called for a moratorium. I believe the AFT has said at least 2 years for us to just, you know, stop and reevaluate where we are, so that the pressure on teachers and schools, certainly to perform, certainly on kids, doesn't get ahead of us.
In fact, we'll be talking to the president of the NEA a little bit later on in the hour, but let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Claudio Sanchez. He covers education for NPR. We're talking about Common Core standards and how what began as a bipartisan effort to try to improve education in this country has devolved into a political fight. And we're talking about that with our guest, and we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. We'll be right back.
1812 Productions, Philadelphia's all-comedy theater company, supports WHYY. Now on stage, 1812's annual political comedy, This Is the Week That Is, written and performed by Philadelphia's own Jennifer Childs and This Is the Week That Is Ensemble, this annual political satire features a script that changes with the headlines and up-to-the-minute reporting on the day's most important news, from Russian invasions to dog curbing in South Philadelphia. Tickets at 1812productions.org.
The Pennsylvania Academy of the Fine Arts supports WHYY. PAFA's 113th Annual Student Exhibition kicks off with a preview party on May 8th, hosted by PAFA's Women's Board, featuring over 1,000 works of art by PAFA's BFA, Certificate, and MFA students. The ASE is an opportunity to meet the artists and purchase work by the rising stars of the art world. PAFA's 113th Annual Student Exhibition is on view May 9th through June 1st. More details at pafa.edu/ASE.
The National Constitution Center supports WHYY. The National Constitution Center is the Museum of We the People, featuring the acclaimed multimedia show Freedom Rising, Signers Hall, and the story of We the People through artifacts, a rare copy of the Constitution, and interactive exhibits. Now through October 19th, Slavery at Jefferson's Monticello, a powerful exhibition that follows six enslaved families who lived and worked at Jefferson's plantation. More at 215-409-6700 or constitutioncenter.org.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowane talking with Claudia Sanchez. He's down at the NPR studio in Washington. He covers education for NPR, and we asked him to join us in this portion of Radio Times to talk about Common Core standards, where they came from and where they're going, and why they have created such a firestorm of debate and criticism. And we have calls coming in at 1-888-477-9499. Claudia, I also wonder about the rollout of these Common Core standards coincided with a lot of school districts cutting budgets, layoffs. Philadelphia here is going through a serious financial crisis, and frankly, so are a lot of other districts in Pennsylvania. Whether you think that collision created some of the criticism of Common Core.
It certainly did, Marty. But remember that, I've heard that a lot of states, many states have begun slowly but surely restoring some of the funding. The question is, how much more money are we going to have to spend to make sure that this Common Core business works? And there are two big areas. One is the technology. I mean, these eventually, in the case of both testing consortia, these tests are going to be computer-based. Kids are going to be taking many of these tests online, and there's going to be a gradual shift towards that. That's expensive. The other is the expense that will have to go into the tests themselves. I mean, local school districts and states are going to have to purchase these tests, and the price is going to go up. I mean, it may go up as much as $25 to $30 or up to that amount. Right now, most states use a lot of cheap, very cheap tests that don't cost a lot of money. But now we're looking at least doubling the price, and that's certainly going to have an impact on school budgets.
And there is a bit of a parent revolt against testing in general. I think Common Core has gotten thrown into this, the idea that students these days spend a lot of time testing. And I wonder how we stack up compared to other industrialized countries.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that. Today on All Things Considered, we have exactly two stories about that. One about how American schools, how much testing goes on there. I visited a local school in the area where kids say, look, we're getting tested 60 to 70. We have 60 to 70 tests to deal with every year. Now, compared to other nations, I mean, it's not so much the number. It's the quality of those tests and the fact that these are pretty much centralized tests, meaning that it's maybe only a handful, maybe one or two big tests that really matter. In this country, we test kids left and right, but only a few matter. And the Common Core, I don't know, it's still hard to say whether it's going to help us come to that point where the tests that really count are the ones that kids have to study for and that teachers are aware of. Right now, it's a hodgepodge of testing, and most of it really doesn't matter. Not even state tests, like in Maryland. Even the superintendent of schools that I talked to said, forget those tests. They're not good, and we need to ratchet things up so that we come up with a better test. And somebody like, a state like Maryland certainly is very supportive of the Common Core.
Let me get, looks like Liz from Middletown, Delaware, to join our conversation. And Liz, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
I had a quick question about the Common Core standards as it relates to children with special needs or learning differences. I felt like in the beginning of the school year, I have a daughter in fifth grade with special needs, and I felt like in the beginning of the school year, although it wasn't verbalized by anyone in particular, I felt like myself as a parent, as well as her special services team and the school administration, we were all sort of figuring this out together, how these Common Core standards were going to affect her IEP and be able to set her up for success in school. It seemed like at first she was being held to the same fifth grade standards as every other child. We later started to figure out that maybe she could still receive some accommodations when she was tested, but that she still, even though that she's delayed in her intellectual disability, she still expected to meet these same Common Core standards. And I was just curious if there's any information about, how this was taken into consideration when these core standards were developed, were special needs cases taken into consideration and how?
Well, let's find out. Liz, thanks for the call. And Claudia, what do you say back to Liz?
Well, you know, that is a really important question that has really not been answered yet. I mean, we're looking at a situation that's slowly evolving. What I have heard is that there are and will be accommodations made for kids with special needs. That includes limited English proficient kids, certainly kids with disabilities, learning disabilities. But remember that, you know, we have two other forces at work here. We have an impetus we have certainly since the passage of the individual laws for disabled children. We've had a move to mainstream some of these kids, to put them into regular classrooms, which has been really good for many families. The other, though, is how do we hold schools accountable for making sure these kids are making progress? And the feds have stepped in there and said, well, you've got to test these kids. Well, you know, that may very well be in flux now. By raising the rigor of these tests, you're making it more challenging, and it may ultimately be up to local districts to decide, well, who are we going to test? What kinds of accommodations are we going to provide? But again, that's a moving target. It's going to be a very interesting decision that people are going to be making. But again, we're talking about the whole notion of accountability. If we're going to say that we're going to educate all kids, well, we mean all kids, including kids with learning disabilities.
Claudia's final question to you before we have to say goodbye. So where do you see Common Core going based on your many years covering education in this country?
Well, despite the controversy, and like I said, you know, there's at least 10 states and that have pulled out, that have really put a stop to this and said, look, we need to rethink this before we go forward. I think that's going to continue. I've had people say that there are as many as 15 states by the end of or the beginning of the fall will have pulled out. So, again, that's happening. But I spoke to Chris Minnick, head of the Council of Chief State School Officers, who represents all the state commissioners of education. And he had said something interesting to me. He said, we're in a place now where states or where no state, even if they back away from the Common Core, is going to go back to lower standards. And he says that's a huge win for us. He says, do I worry about it? Do I worry that more states are going to pull out? Of course I do. But we're not going to go back to the mediocre and less than rigorous testing and standards that we've had in place. And again, people are kind of looking at the silver lining here. The controversy will continue, but again, most people seem secure, at least proponents do, that we're going to have something better in place by 2015.
Well, Claudia Sanchez, thank you so much for getting our conversation started and for joining us today on Radio Times.
You're welcome.
And he covers education for NPR. And yes, we are talking about Common Core standards. Back in the days of No Child Left Behind, a group of governors, state education leaders, got together to try to improve education that led to the creation of Common Core standards. And as it stands now, although things are shifting and changing, a majority of states in D.C. Have signed on. And joining us now is Jim Douglas. He's former governor of Vermont, currently an executive in residence at Middlebury College. He was active in the Common Core movement and is continuing to speak in support of the standards. And Jim Douglas, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Well, thanks so much, Marty.
And I should say you're joining us from the Bahamas, so lucky you. Thanks for taking time out of what sounds like a vacation. And let me give that phone number to
the record. I never came here when I was in office. So.
Okay, I understand. and to our listeners, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. I was talking with Claudia Sanchez about how Common Core came to be, but also the kind of pushback that it's gotten from a diverse group of interested parties, which I think is most interesting. Are you surprised by that?
I am. Just to take a step back, it was in the last decade, of course, when we had a number of meetings with our chief state school officers, one I recall keynoted by Bill Gates. But we heard from a lot of people in the business world who came to the governors and said, you know, we just aren't seeing the level of achievement that we need in order to find employees who can fill the bill, who can help us succeed and compete with other countries. And that was a major impetus for the governors and chief school officers to pursue the idea of a Common Core. The second reason was that we had just been through No Child Left Behind. That, as our listeners will recall, put in place mandatory test protocols a huge infusion of federal dollars, which has traditionally not been the case in public education, and requiring that schools make adequate yearly progress and requiring that they be labeled as failing if they don't. Well, a lot of governors and others thought, wait a minute, this is a federalization of a program that's traditionally been run by state and local governments. We've got to push back. So the whole notion of Common Core was to resist a federalization, to have the states initiate some standards. And it's perplexing to me that a lot of the pushback is along the lines of the feds are taking over. Well, no, this is exactly the opposite.
Well, and there's so many things to talk about with you, but one is that in the two states where some Common Core tests have been given, that's New York and Kentucky, the scores, the children's scores really took this gigantic tumble. What does that tell you?
Well, it tells me that the standards are more rigorous than they used to be, which is the whole idea. And remember that the Common Core standards are simply that. They're not specific tests. There are a couple of consortia that have developed them. They're not the curricula that continue to be developed at the state and local level. These are accomplishments that we expect kids at certain grade levels to be able to achieve. So it's important to remember that a lot of the implementation, all of the implementation really, is individual states and localities.
Well, and by changing the curriculum or even changing the testing, does that really improve education? And I ask that knowing, of course, the importance of just the quality of a teacher, the quality of teaching, student readiness, parental involvement, high quality material. All these are factors that go into creating a good education environment. How does Common Core deal with that?
Well, you're exactly right. Those are the key elements, and those in the long run are what will determine the level of a student's success. But we have to have some way of measuring it, and I know folks don't like standardized tests, but we've had them as long as I can remember, even when I was in school half a century ago. So there has to be some way to measure achievement. And remember that the whole notion of the Common Core standards is to raise the bar. You know, it seems that folks complain about our public education system at great length, and now we're trying to do something about it to raise the standards, to make it more rigorous, to ensure that the employers of America can find the workers they need to compete.
Well, and I notice that teachers under Common Core, as it stands today, are not being told what to teach, except for 11th and 12th graders reading, or I guess understanding the Declaration of Independence, the preamble to the Constitution, Lincoln's second inaugural. Why was that important to include?
Well, I don't want to tell you that we governors pored over those specific issues as we developed the standards. Remember that there are just two basic areas that the Common Core standards involve, math and language arts. Within the language arts curriculum, there are applications to science and history, as you noted. We want to make sure that a student isn't able simply to read and learn vocabulary, but to apply that level of skill to the substance of these curricular areas. And so I think understanding the basic documents of our nation's history is quite important.
And that's Jim Douglas, a former governor of Vermont, currently an executive in residence at Middlebury College, and has been active in the Common Core movement. And I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Let me get Milton from Wayne to join us. And Milton, go ahead. You are on Radio Times. Go ahead, Milton.
Yes. My question for your guest is, he keeps using the comment more rigorous.
Yes.
The product, particularly by Pearson, has been used in pilot testing. And much of the statistical analysis does not show the test is more rigorous. It just shows a badly written test. I'm not going to go into all the statistical measures you can use to evaluate test scores. But my assertion is that the test is simply badly written. It's not an attack on core values. It's an attack on the testing as written and as graded, and the results from it using a relative simple statistical analysis.
Well, Milton,
I think we'll put my answer off the line.
Okay, fair enough. I appreciate the call to Radio Times. Jim Douglas, a criticism of the test itself that they're poorly written. Can you answer that?
I hadn't heard that specifically, but perhaps the caller is correct. There are two consortia of states that have come together to use tests. One is called PARC. It's an acronym for something. And then there's another that's called Smarter Balance. That's the one that Vermont joined. When I first heard the phrase, I thought it was a margarine of some kind. But but there are two different testing protocols that are available. And I'm no testing expert. And I've said, as the Common Core standards have been implemented, that if there are problems with implementation, with design of curricula, with test design and application, well, they should be fixed. If some states and localities or schools need more time to develop the curriculum to meet the Common Core standards, well, then they ought to receive it. But the basic goal of the governors 5 years ago was to raise the bar, was to ensure that American kids are more successful than they've been. We hear so many complaints from the business community. We see other countries doing better. America generally rates about 30th in the world in terms of international test results. We've got to do better, and this is an effort to do that.
And how long do you think, assuming Common Core gets instituted in some form or another, how soon do you think there would be the kind of results that you and other governors had been looking for?
Well, it's not going to be overnight. We're talking about the development of our kids over the course of a dozen or more years in public schools. We need to put the curricula in place. We need to sensitize the teachers to make whatever changes are necessary to address a different approach. And so I think it's going to take some time. But I had the privilege in your neck of the woods of visiting with Governor Jack Markell, a good friend from Delaware, an elementary school in the Wilmington area. We went into a second grade and into a fifth grade, and one of your reporters was there as well, Marty. And I was excited about what I saw. Kids in second grade not only reading a book about animals, but being asked by the teacher, why do you think the author said this or put it this way? And getting them to break up into little groups to come up with ideas. And I think good things are happening in our classrooms, and I think over the long run it's going to make a positive difference.
About a minute before we have to take a break, why do you think it's so hard to reform education in this country?
Well, it seems to me that there are certain government services that involve everybody, and so there are an awful lot of opinions about them. In Vermont, we always say that everyone has an opinion about our fish and wildlife programs, how large the deer ought to be before they're taken, how many antlers they should have, what the season length should be. And the same goes with education. It's something that affects everybody. And we want nothing but the best for our kids, but we have to look at it in the broader context, which is the competitiveness that we are challenged by on a global basis. So I think we'll get there, but some of these things aren't easy.
And that's Jim Douglas again, a former governor of Vermont, and he has been active in the Common Core movement. The second of three guests in this hour of Radio Times. In fact, we'll be taking a very short break at getting back to our guests. And we've got Dennis Van Roekel, president of the National Education Association, who will be joining us after Jim Douglas. We want you to join us as well. And again, that phone number is 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Time. Stay with us. Much more after the short break. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Westchester University has been offering graduate studies for over 50 years. Today, Westchester has over 70 graduate degree and certificate programs in business and public affairs, health, visual and performing arts, education, arts and sciences, and their new doctorate of nursing practice. With campuses in suburban Chester County, the new Center City, Philadelphia location, or online. Details at wcupa.edu/grad. Graduate education at Westchester University. Learn more. Montgomery School supports WHYY. An independent school for pre-K through grade 8 students, Montgomery School believes in experiential education. Students can develop a passion for learning through freedom of choice and content while developing vital skills for success. An open house is May 6th at 7 p.m. It's an opportunity to see how Montgomery can help make a difference in your child's education. Details at montgomeryschool.org/admissions. Montgomery School. Inspired to explore. Prepared to succeed.
Support for WHYY comes from the Philadelphia Speaker Series, presented by Widener University, offering its 2014-2015 season of diverse ideas and world perspectives. 7 engaging evenings at the Kimmel Center, with a lineup of celebrated personalities, including historian David McCullough, Dan Rather, Ken Burns, Senator Olympia Snowe, and Alan Alda. More information online at philadelphiaspeakerseries.org, sponsored by the Haverford Trust Company.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowen, and if you're just joining us, we're talking about the Common Core Standards. And our guest is Jim Douglas, former governor of Vermont, currently an executive in residence at Middlebury College, and has been active in the Common Core movement, certainly when he was governor of Vermont. And we're taking calls again at 1-888-477-9499. Jim Douglas, I asked this of Claudia Sanchez, NPR's education reporter. And this is very true here in Philadelphia, and I think also parts of Pennsylvania, which is instituting Common Core when so many school districts are struggling with their own financial problems, with teacher layoffs, and a lot of small and large problems that they're having to deal with. Do you think the timing is a problem?
Well, I guess there's never a good time for significant reforms, but we really can't wait. I mentioned the international test scores that we're confronting, the concerns on the part of the employer community and their need for a higher qualification of employee in many cases. So I think we have to take this on. As I suggested earlier, if more time is required in some areas, well, then they certainly ought to be able to accommodate that. But remember that each child can't wait. Each child is in school for only a dozen or so years and deserves the best that we can offer. So I think it's important that we move forward as expeditiously as we can.
Going back, if you could roll back the clock and do anything different when you were coming up with the Common Core, would you do anything different?
Well, it's interesting. A couple of colleagues and I were chatting about whether we might have chosen a different name.
Really?
I don't know, Freedom Core. Or, you know, I'm sort of kidding. But some people think that common sounds too much like a certain political doctrine and may be a problem. But secondly, because the whole idea is that we're pushing back against the feds, I wish some of the federal officials hadn't been so outspoken in favor of it. That sounds strange,
really?
Because we welcome it, but when the President and Secretary of Education say this is a great idea, that caused more angst among some folks who were resistant anyway. But other than that, I think it was the right thing to do at the right time, and I hope that despite the bumps, we'll get where we need to be.
But that comment, and we're going to have to say goodbye to you, is really just about the political environment that we live in.
Correct. And it's no reflection at all on the substance of it, which I think is exactly the right thing to do. So I hope everybody will look beyond the politics and understand the important goal here and realize that we have to raise the bar and be more competitive.
Well, Jim Douglas, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times and taking time out of your vacation in the Bahamas. Get back to the beach, and thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Marty.
And Jim Douglas, a former governor of Vermont and has been active in the Common Core movement. Joining us now is Dennis Van Roekel, and he is the president of the National Education Association, the third of three guests in this hour of Radio Times as we talk about Common Core. And Dennis Van Roekel, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Great to be here with you.
Nice to have you with us. And what's interesting about your organization is that early on, the NEA, the National Education Association, was in support of Common Core and now has become a critic. What's the problem?
Oh, no, we are not critics of the Common Core state standards. We, from the very beginning, we have been involved, we have been supportive, and we remain that way. But we believe there's a real difference and differentiation that has to be made between the Common Core standards themselves and the implementation. Where it has been supported, or excuse me, where it has been implemented well in states, not only does the support there, but it grows, and so does the excitement. But in states where the implementation was botched, it's a very different story. So I came out very strongly that the importance of implementing it well. These standards are far too important to America's students not to do it well. And what we know works in those states where it's going well, they give time to teachers to really understand the new standards. They give them time to meet with parents and students so that they understand. And then it takes a lot of time and collaboration to start developing new learning and teaching materials that are actually aligned to a very different set of standards that require very different skills, much more complex and critical thinking skills. So when given the time and the resources and support, it works, and the winners are our students.
And what states are we talking about where things have been going well?
I think if I had to name two states right off the top of my head, I would say Kentucky, I would say California. And some of the things they've done, for example, in California, they said, we're not going to give the old test that is aligned to a different set of standards. It makes no sense to them to require all of that time, energy, and learning time for students to be used taking a test that doesn't measure what they're now teaching in the classrooms. And the other thing they've done in these states is had that time with collaboration. This is a heavy lift. It's not an easy thing to go from old standards and new assessments, or old assessments, to new standards and new assessments. But those that take the time to collaborate and say, what's the best way to do that? When they ask the very people you're asking to implement these standards, ask them the question, give us your best ideas about how we should implement these that will assist our children the most. And where that's happened, it's gone well. Where it doesn't happen, it's a very different story.
You're saying ask the teachers how to implement this.
Absolutely, because they're the ones doing it. And when I mentioned about teaching and learning materials, Dr. Bill Schmidt from Michigan State is on the advisory committee for both PARC and Smarter Balance. And at the university, they did a study of 10 or 12 major publishers of textbooks. And, of course, all the new textbooks stamped on the cover say aligned with state standards or Common Core state standards. But what his analysis showed is that is not true. Some of them are only about 20 to 40% aligned with the new standards. One textbook publisher who had a new book out, on the cover it said aligned with Common Core state standards, they did a page-by-page analysis of the old book and the new one, and there is no difference.
Oh, my
His
goodness.
His advice to my board was, don't buy anything. They're not ready.
Wow, I didn't think you could do something like that, but that shows you how naive I am. You mentioned Kentucky, and we know that Kentucky and I believe New York recently had their students take these Common Core tests, and the students in Kentucky didn't do so well. In fact, their numbers tumbled quite precipitously. What does that tell you?
Well, one of the things that I think is really critical when we talk about this, I was a high school math teacher for 23 years, and if one of my students got a 90 on an English test and a 70 on my math test, we wouldn't say their scores went down. We would say they got different scores over different material. When you look at the old standards and the old tests, and then you look at the new standards and a whole new assessment, we are not testing or measuring attainment of the same standards. So it's totally different. So I think it is inaccurate to say the scores went down. This is the first year. It's a baseline. What we ought to be doing now is to say, okay, here's where we are with these new standards. What is it that we need to do and do well to ensure that all of our students reach these new standards? I was listening to a colleague from the National School Boards Association, and I loved his analogy. He said, the standards are like a football field. You have all of the chalk lines, and our job is to figure out how to get all of our students, not some, but all of our students to the end of the field, to the goal line. What we do, the materials we develop, the time we take, the collaboration, all of that is to develop our strategy for moving all of those students to that goal line, attainment of those Common Core state standards. So whatever assessment comes out in the first year is a totally new assessment and and score for a new set of standards, and we need to take that and move it forward.
But how does having a new set of standards, though, address the problem of achievement or educational inequality that we know is so dramatic in this country?
The standards alone will not change the huge inequality and gaps in opportunity. They won't. But what it does do is currently, before the Common Core State Standards, standards were so different from state to state. And I think anyone would be hard-pressed to make a case in the 21st century that whether you live in Montana, Missouri, or Maryland, that you need to know different things in order to succeed in college or career. So the Common Core State Standards are the adults in the system saying this is our best work to figure out what every student needs to know and be able to do to be successful. The inequalities and inequities of the system are what keep students from attaining those, and we have to address those. But just having new standards won't do that. What we have to do is to look at the kind of supports and programs we give students. One, very important, is early childhood education. We know every research that has been done for years and years and years shows that students who are left behind prior to the entry of school, that due to their economic circumstances, do not have the opportunities for quality preschool education opportunities, they never really catch up. So what are we going to do about that? That's a responsibility and an accountability for the whole school system. Readiness for kids. That will help address. Another thing we have to do to address the inequality is we have to stop the revolving doors of principals and teachers at these high-need schools. It is unfair to students who have already started off with a huge challenge because they're behind when they come to school at age 5 to then give them a circumstance and environment where everybody keeps changing. We have to. That is a different problem than the standard. So, yes, we must address the inequities and the inequalities of the system. But what our job then is to get every student to meet those new standards.
And that's Dennis Van Rokel. He's president of the National Education Association, and you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY. Let me get a couple of callers in. We have, looks like Catherine from Upper Darby joining us on Radio Times. Hi, Catherine. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you. I agree with what Mr. Van Rokel is saying. He's got the right idea of how to implement this. But what I'd like to say is when all of these different reforms are reported and discussed for the public in newspapers and TV and radio news, they never tell you just what are the standards. In other words, what specifically, what are children going to be expected to learn at each grade level?
Well, Catherine, we touched on that a little bit with Claudio Sanchez, and I do want to give Dennis Van Rokel perhaps a chance to weigh in because it isn't a curriculum. We're not talking about a curriculum that's going to be applied to all districts across the country, but I think there is some confusion about what is meant by Common Core. Dennis Van Rokel?
Oh, that's a great question, Catherine, and it really does point out what there is confusion. There is a real difference between standards, curriculum, which are the materials we use to help students learn what they need to know, and then the assessments. What's great about, I don't know, Catherine, if you play with the Internet at all, but if you just Google Common Core State Standards, they will give you websites, and you can actually download those to a computer or a laptop, an iPad. And what's fascinating is if you actually read through those, there are fewer than we used to have, but they go much deeper. And the verbs they use in these standards are what make them so different. They have verbs like differentiate, describe, contrast, which means it takes real analysis on the part of students. It cannot be tested or measured simply by a bubble test and a multiple choice question. So it requires far more of students in demonstrating their understanding of a concept. You know, the trouble with a bubble test is if you ask a question and give four choices, everybody has a 25% chance of getting it right if there are four choices. And they may know nothing about it whatsoever, but they have a 25% chance of getting it right. When you ask people or students to demonstrate an understanding or to analyze or to differentiate between two positions, or to listen to a speech by someone who's trying to convince you of something and ask what are the points of persuasion they're using. When you ask a student to do that, and if they know nothing about the topic, it will be very evident. So how we assess it is so important, and actually that's what excites teachers. It makes learning far more exciting than drilling for a multiple choice test where you bubble answers.
And we're almost out of time here, and I was talking with Jim Douglas, former governor of Vermont, early on supporter of Common Core, and he said, look, if it's going to take more time to improve this rollout and not to have the kind of botched rollout that your organization has described, he said, I'm all for that. Do you think that is, if we're going forward and we're going to stick with Common Core, that that's what needs to be done?
Absolutely. My dad, one of the lessons he taught me, and he used to say, if you don't have time to do it right, when will you have time to do it over? And on the implementation of Common Core State Standards, it is too important for every child in America that we do this well and we get it right. And so we have to take the time to do it right the first time, because we really don't have the time to do it over, and our students can't wait.
And when you talk about time, like 3 years, 2 years, 6 months, 5 years, 10 years, what are we talking about here?
I think it's hard to say there's a hard and fast number for every state, because they're at different places. In the California law, what it said is that the new assessments cannot be used for at least 2 years for high-stakes decisions. And what they said is, if we deem that it will take more than 2 years to be ready, then we'll take more than 2 years. I like that approach. Don't make it hard and fast. And I mean, I always hated to say to students, you have to know this by Friday or you don't have a chance to learn it. No, I want you to learn it no matter how long it takes.
Well, on that note, Dennis Van Roekel, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
All right. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. President of the National Education Association. Also with us, Jim Douglas, former governor of Vermont, active in the Common Core movement. And we began our conversation with Claudio Sanchez, who covers education for NPR. Go to WHYY.org/Radio Times, and you can find out much more about this program. In fact, go to our homepage and carry on a conversation about Common Core. I'm Artie Moscowain. Stay with us for the second hour of Radio Times. We'll be right back.